This is the John Gambling Show on News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
Now, with New York's only local news talk morning radio program, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
Well, John Gambling is here, the mayor on his way. We've been told 8 minutes after 8 o'clock. And one of the things that we were talking earlier this morning about taxes, sales taxes, and the fact that many governors, especially Republican governors throughout the country, are looking at their income tax status. And the likes of Kansas and Louisiana and some of the others are actually looking at the possibility of changing their tax laws to eliminate the income tax, so that, because the statistics prove that those states that don't have it are seeing an influx of population, an influx of jobs and businesses, and therefore revenues and the health in the economy of the state increases, and they're seriously thinking about doing that. There's a lot of stories this morning. There are a lot of stories this morning on taxes, including on taxes about highway repairs and public transit systems. Of course, here in New York City, the MTA systems and how do you pay for those has been an issue that the mayor has tackled and the state legislature has tackled. Of course, the MTA is a state agency. Some of the proposals that are being kicked around across the country, in at least 13 states, governors are talking about how to raise money. I mean, this seems to be the whole focal point of you know, the world. Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick considering several options to raise about $1 billion a year, including raising the state's 21 cents a gallon gasoline tax. Tom Cobert from Pennsylvania wants to remove a cap on oil company franchise taxes paid by gas stations, again, to look to a couple of $1 billion to fix the roads and the like. Mr. Mayor, good morning to you.
Good morning. Sorry, I'm a little
bit late.
That's
all right. Not a problem. Just talking taxes and highways, and I said obviously that was a focus of yours with congestion pricing, and it's one that hasn't gone away and hasn't been fixed.
Well, you know, if you want services, somebody's got to pay for them. And the truth of the matter is there's some inflation built into everything, whether it's increase in fuel costs or labor cost or another safety measure. Every time we add another level of safety and security and oversight, all that stuff costs a lot of money. There's the head of the Dallas Federal Reserve Bank was talking the other day, I heard him on radio, about all of the small banks. Most of the banks in the country are small banks. There's a handful of the too big to fail kind of banks, but the vast 99% of the banks are small banks, and they just cannot afford and cannot find people to comply with this new Dodd-Frank bill. It may be a great bill. You can argue whether it's good or bad, but the compliance with it is
And the big banks, I understand, are spending tens of
millions. Spending tens, but they can at least
absorb it.
They could do it. It may not be good for the stockholders or whatever, but they can absorb it. The small banks just can't do it. And, you know, it's another level of all of the stuff we talk about are nice things, but nobody ever stops and says, well, can we afford it? There's a child's game that they keep advertising on the radio, and they talk about the difference between have to have needs and wants, I think is the way they phrase it. And that's something we've got to sit and say. I want some stuff, but I don't actually need it. And if I don't want to pay more taxes, I'm going to have to just take the needs and not the wants.
Did you read the story this morning? We were just talking about that. It had to do with a directive coming out of Washington about sports and the disabled. And they were going to change the rules that are going to require sport programs to include disabled where it is appropriate. But as you know, every time you layer these on, there's a cost involvement, and it can only expand.
Yeah, and there's also something that I think is even more disturbing in most of these things, and that just has nothing to do with sports and the disabled, but in lots of government programs, we commit a little bit of fraud against the public. We say we're going to do something, and then we structure it so that nobody's really going to do it, or only a few people have to do it, and most don't. So that
we do it to appease some people.
Well, you do it so that the people that want it can say I got it, and the people that didn't want it, the elected official can say to them, don't worry about it, not going to happen. That's clearly happened with guns, for example. Have regulations, don't fund the enforcement of the regulations. Both sides hear what think they got what they wanted. In fact, neither side did.
Do you think that's what we're going to see with the Feinstein bill and others?
Well, I'm optimistic that some things will come out of this. I'm going to spend some time down in Washington in the next few days focusing on that. I've got a whole list of people I want to say thank you for Sandy money. The Congress, Senate will vote that. But, you know, if we're going to need other things from Washington, so you got to be sure you say thank you. You can tell me it was painful to get here and it shouldn't have been this way, and that's what I... Be that as it may, we always need things from Washington, and if you don't say thank you, you don't get it the next time. In the case of guns, I think the American public has come to the realization that enough is enough. We're not talking about the Constitution. We're just talking about some common sense things here and some courage. And the elected officials have got to understand that the people that want to their kids to be safe and themselves to be safe have to be heard, and not just a handful of advocates for anyone.
I was surprised. I looked at the Feinstein bill this morning, the actual bill and right. what it contains, and it is very specific.
I have not read the bill yet. I saw a picture in the paper today.
It's model, right. make.
The trouble with when you specify that, they'll come up with another model.
Well, they do put parameters around.
So
it as
you know
well,
you have so, to do right. that as well. There have been gun laws in New York, for example. I think the gun law for one kind of gun, if it has a telescopic sight and a pistol grip, it is an assault weapon. If it does not have those two, it is not an assault weapon, and the New York State ban stops doesn't apply. Having said that, you can, with the same credit card, in even the same receipt, buy the pistol grip and the telescopic sight. I don't even know. Maybe they'll even put it on for you, for all I know.
But there's ways around all this.
Yeah, I mean, it's that kind of stuff.
What's your concern about existing guns? I mean, that you know,
well,
existing
it,
that.
I don't think
those
you're going to do anything about it. I personally don't think that assault weapons belong in the hands of people other than our military. There are people who violently disagree with that, who say what the Founding Fathers said is the military might take over, so this is to let the citizens fight the military. That was the purpose of it. It was a typical states' right federalism battle at the framers of the Constitution worked on. But regardless, no matter how you come out on it, it's really hard to see getting rid of getting back and getting those guns out of the hands. But
do you think this has a chance of getting through?
Some things do, and mm-hmm. some things will be struggles. I'm optimistic on everything, and I'm going to get down and work as hard as I can. Now, I'll give you, it's interesting, when you say that gun laws don't work, let me give you a good example. In New York State, even before the latest bill that the governor passed, and that adds, it's not perfect, no bill's perfect, but it has added some stuff. But the thing that is, it's true that it's harder to get a gun in New York State and particularly New York City, than elsewhere. And if you look at the suicide rate, our suicide rate in New York City is half of the national average. So don't tell me about the city's pressure and all that sort of thing and the fact that the city attracts people who may have emotional problems. The bottom line is New York City is a great place to live, and we have half the suicide rate for the rest of the country. But if you look at the suicide rate with guns, now suicide typically, not all the time, but typically is you get annoyed, you get frustrated, you kill yourself. If you don't have the ways to kill yourself, you say, well, maybe I'll watch television and do it tomorrow, and then it doesn't come up again. That's right. Just the real world. The fact that it's harder to get guns has resulted in the suicide rate with guns in New York City being one-tenth the national average. Just think about that. It's hard, so these gun laws do work. They're not perfect. They're not going to prevent everything. They're not going to prevent some crazy kid who gets an automatic weapon and kills a bunch of people. But there are 33 murders a day, mostly with handguns across the country, and something like 42, 45 suicides with guns every day across
every day.
The country. Oh, every day, John. You cover Sandy Hook one time, it's an extra supplement in the newspaper, we go into high dungeon and this is terrible. We do it every day. We killed the day that terrible tragedy happened in Connecticut, 26 people. there's probably, another, on average, another 33 people killed in the country with handguns.
That's 120,000 people a year.
No, it's 12,000. 12,000 people a year, 19,000 people commit suicide with guns.
Joe, interesting, very interesting. Let me take a break, Mr. Mayor, 18 minutes after 8 o'clock. And let me also take the opportunity to remind you that if you got a question for Mayor Bloomberg, 800-321-0710. 800-321-0710. Coming right back.
John Gambling and Mayor Mike, News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Mayor Mike and John Gambling on News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
22 minutes after 8 o'clock, Mayor Michael Bloomberg and John Gambling on a Friday here at WOR. Bus strike, still striking?
Still striking. We have offered the union and the bus companies that their employees, that their members work for. And remember, the strikers are employees of a whole bunch of different bus companies. Some of these have five routes. Some of them have lots of them, but there's 20, 30 bus companies. And they, I think striking is a mistake, but that's, you
but
know.
Not illegal, correct? Or is it illegal?
The bus companies have, they're not city employees, so okay. Taylor law doesn't apply.
All right.
The bus companies, if I understand it, have gone to the National Labor Relations Board arguing this is an illegal strike. They have no right to do it. I don't know how that's going to come out, but that is between the employees and the bus companies. Having said that, the city does have a vested interest in them solving their problems and getting buses back. We've tried to mitigate the pain. We have MetroCards for people. We pay if you drive your kid to school, as long as 55 cents a mile, I think. If you take a cab, we'll pay for that. We're in the process. I don't know if it's done yet.
It's going to cost a lot of money. Well, you're not paying the bus companies.
You're not paying the bus companies, so it's mitigated to some extent. Right. And the bus company contracts are expensive, so it's not that much different. For a special ed kid, they could take a cab every day.
Was it $6,100 a person that was, I read?
But for a special ed kid, it's about $13,000 because you have to have a matron on board. These are kids who really do need the help. But it's expensive. And, you know, we've, as a society, said we're going to help them, and I happen to be 100% behind that.
Back to what you just said at the top
but
of the show.
But somebody's got to pay. Anyways, my hope is that the union representing its employees comes to an agreement with the bus companies, and they can submit a bid and win the business back or keep the business. If not, there are plenty of other bus companies, we think. All I know is from what we did last year, we saved $95 million over 5 years. This group of the contracts, we'll see what happens.
Teacher evaluation, is there talking going on or is that over?
Well, there's always talking. Let's see what happens. I have always been very skeptical that the union was serious about coming up with an evaluation deal. Because the union's job is to not improve the school system, not to help the kids. The union's job is to take care of its members. And unions typically want to have differentials based only on seniority, certainly not on competency or productivity or however you want to measure employees. And, you know, if I'm wrong, nobody would be happier than me to be wrong. But so far, most of the things, not all, but most of the things that they've asked for, particularly as we got close to an agreement, and we really were close to an agreement, would slow down the process.
Or eliminate it. Wasn't there a sunset clause that
was proposed? Well, they would eliminate it after 2 years. That was one of their proposals, which we said absolutely not to. Keep in mind that to evaluate a teacher, the state law says you have to have two annual
reviews.
So by the time you evaluated any teacher, the law had gone away. Now, how the rest of the state, counties, 99% of them, got away with one-year contracts when you have 2 years, I mean, it's a sham. It means absolutely nothing. And we're just not going to do that. I don't know how we're going to pay for it. It means fewer teachers. It means fewer every kind of employee in the city because all this money is fungible and you can't take all of the money out of one thing, one pot. The race to the top money, the deadline for that money is actually in September, and that's $285 million
of
aid.
On top of the $250.
The $250 is state money out of the 2013 budget, and we were supposed to come up with an agreement with the union for that.
But this is the next year, is there?
Then
not?
There's now the next year, which I'll talk about in on Monday when I'm up in Albany. Look, I'm sympathetic with the governor. He is trying to encourage, as and with Arne Duncan and the president, they're trying to encourage better schools. But the law before the current one in New York State required everybody to come together. Never going to happen, in my thought. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. I'd love to be wrong. But there's no evidence that I can see that says everybody's going to come to an agreement. And that's not good for the schools. It's going to mean fewer teachers, whether it's through attrition or probably not going to be less. You can do it through attrition. But we're just going to have to, if we don't have the 2013 $250 million and we don't have more money in the 2014 budget, that's $500 million. It's a big hole in
our
budget.
How do you get to the place that you want to get to, and I think the parents of children in New York City want to get to, with an evaluation program, when there is no consequence to the union?
Well, that's exactly right. That's the fallacy in the whole idea. In fact, the union leaders probably benefit by saying no, because if they said yes, some of their members might be pushed out. If they say yes to an agreement, if they say no, everybody keeps their jobs. So there is no. And in fact, every other state in the country for a race to the top money, I think it's everyone, probably certainly the vast majority, they don't have this clause. The clause basically, they say, can't come to an agreement, the state will impose an agreement. Now, I'm not so sure the governor wants to get involved in trying to impose an agreement. Education, we have a tradition of being more at a local level. New York City is a very different kettle of fish than the rest of the state, where the state has to really do it because the individual counties don't have the structure and the support staffs to do it themselves, perhaps. As I said, I'm sympathetic. I think the governor's on the right track in trying to do something. I think the country, the national government's on the right track. But I do not think that this track is workable. It certainly didn't work for the 2013 money. It's not going to work for next time, so there's not any reason to do it again.
So I know this is difficult because of the position that you are in, but don't we have to be pragmatic and look at the equation? The equation never equals out to the solution, and therefore change the equation?
Municipal unions have always had great support from the legislators, whether they are city, state, or even federal unions, have great support. You see the post office, which loses a fortune. They can't cut back the number of post offices and workers, partially because every town wants to keep their post office, but partially because there's a lot of jobs involved. And I'm sympathetic to people who want to keep their jobs. The question is, when it comes, for example, to the bus strike, people keep saying to me, and the unions, I met with them, and they kept saying, look, these people aren't making a lot of money. That's true. They work hard. I assume that's true. They're valuable, yes. Well-trained, yes. But my job is not to try to maintain their jobs and their pay scale. That's the union's job or their personal responsibility. My job is to get the services the city needs for the least amount of money, because what's clear out here, and you were talking about it when I walked in, public does not want to pay any more taxes. Even on the left, where they are more interested in maintaining entitlements and services, they don't want to pay any more taxes either. And in fact, if you take a look at what happened to this last bill where everybody was going to reduce taxes, everybody's taxes in this country went up. When they get the tax bill, for all of the talk about cutting taxes, and yes, they raised them more for people over $500,000 or $250,000, whatever it was, everybody's taxes went up because we all say we want more services. And when you try to cut back any service, and you're going to see the state's going to have a big problem, Medicaid, the federal government's trying to get costs under control. If they cut back Medicaid aid to the state, I'm sympathetic to the governor. He's going to have to find alternative sources or do fewer things.
Yeah, there's the story this morning about over $1 billion worth Medicaid money.
What's also bad is we've traditionally used Medicaid money to train doctors. If that money goes away, I don't know how you're going to train doctors. If we don't train doctors, all this insurance stuff is meaningless because there are no doctors.
Exactly, and the 31 million more people into the sort of insurance pool, and if you don't have doctors to go to, as you say, what's the point?
I had dinner last weekend with a woman who's a big deal doctor in one of the New York big hospitals, and just listening to the amount of, 12 years after college to get board certified and her medical training and internships and residencies, which they have pretty much combined, but whatever. The cost of all of that, why would anybody do it? You can say I want to do it for altruistic reasons, but you still have to pay the bills.
You still have to pay the bills, and you still have to put the time in. And if you put the time in, what are you talking about? 20 years of education to become a doctor, and then you're getting paid, a barely subsistive number.
You would never, ever get the money back, because if you had worked during that time, even at a very low-paying job, just you would have been so much further away. Thank goodness people are willing to do it, but they still have to, if they can't eat, they can't be,
practice medicine.
Right.
No way. All right, hang tight, Mr. Mayor. 800-321-0710. I see two lines open, 800-321-0710. If you've got a question for the mayor, we'll be right back. Joe Bartlett at 830.
Mayor Michael Bloomberg on the John Gambling Show. News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
23 now before 9 o'clock. John and Mayor Mike here with you as well. 800-321-0710 if you've got a question. Now, I've heard you say that you were not going to comment on those that have indicated they want your job coming up at the end of the year. But yesterday there was a forum, I think, hosted by the Daily News, and it seemed to me that all of the Democratic candidates want to throw out a lot of what you and your various chancellors have put in place, like closing of schools, charters.
Number one, I think there's always rhetoric that has nothing to do with what they would do if they get in office. And number two, yes, I'm not going to sit here because you have nothing to do for the next 340 days. You having said that, the public should really clearly listen. When you have school systems, we're considered the model in the country. We've done dramatic things in improving minority kids and majority kids and every group in the schools. Schools are dramatically better than they were before. We used to have trailers around all the schools, lots of the big schools. Almost all are gone. We built 100,000 seats over the last 10 years. Same thing is true with housing. 165,000 units of affordable housing. We're on schedule. That'll finish next year, but we're close, even through the worst economic time. The rapid repair program. We've done over 7,000 houses in New York City where we, in the last month and a half or so, have put heat, hot water, and electricity in those houses. Still about 3,000 to go, and we're doing it at about 200-250 a day.
Wow.
I mean, nobody's ever done this before. In every other case, in every disaster that I know, you're on your own. Can you imagine trying to get a plumber and a carpenter and an electrician to come in?
When everybody in your neighborhood is looking for the same
exactly.
thing.
Exactly. And this program, Kaz Holloway really is the genius behind it, or the deputy mayor for operations. We have half a dozen or eight, something like that, construction companies. We have a deal with them. They supervise them. They hire the contractors. We schedule the whole thing. FEMA pays for it. Nobody's ever done anything remotely like this. And then you listen to these people talk about, they just have, number one, they have no idea what they're talking about. Number two, they have no suggestions on what to do. And number three, they just sound ridiculous. I will say, the one aspirant that we know of on the Democratic side that really hasn't engaged in any of this, most of this foolishness is Quinn. She's much more rational and understands there's no simple solution to complex problems. And people are doing, and what's more, if you criticize all the people that are doing things, why would anybody want to come and take those jobs again? And then when the things work, nobody goes back and remembers that they worked.
But credit is hard to come by.
Yeah, some of these commissioners have been so innovative. I've worked in the public and private sector, and I can tell you, I don't think I've ever seen a group as creative and as hardworking as the average New York City employee. I hope in my company there I can say the same thing. I do believe that. But the people that blame, say, the public sector doesn't work very well. Public sector is different than the private sector. We demand specificity before you do things that's sometimes not available. We have layer after layer after layer of safeguards built on the back of scandals earlier in history, which are all fine ideas at the time, but it makes it so much more difficult to go and to do things. But, you know, the city is in better shape than it is ever before. I was talking at dinner last night with some people who had asked about the city. We have record number of people living here. We have record number of people working here. We have record number of people, tourists coming here, Super Bowl included, in next year. Super Bowl is actually technically, because a couple of Jersey newspapers asked me, the Super Bowl is going to be in New Jersey. So, you know, the, a lot of the people in New Jersey, I'm sure it rankles Governor Christie when they say New York Giants, New York Jets. But, Governor, they are playing in New Jersey, so that's good. And
Share the wealth.
Yeah, I mean, and a lot of the NFL was very careful to make sure a lot of the hotels that they use are Jersey hotels and that sort of thing. So it's great for New Jersey, and it's great for New York, great for the whole regional area. And, you know, I assume Governor Christie will be very happy, and Governor Cuomo will as well. And so, but you just gotta say thank you, and you gotta understand that these problems aren't simple, and that we have some commissioners. I keep shaking my head. I never would have thought of that stuff. They don't make the right decision all the time, but they do an awful lot more than any other government I've ever read about or heard about.
Over the past week, with the cold weather. Extremely cold weather in relationship to what we've seen over the last couple of years. I'm seeing pictures and stories of people in Staten Island, people in the Rockaways, living in houses that have no heat. There is opportunity.
All they got to do is pick up the phone and go. That we will pay for hotels, or FEMA will pay for hotels. They don't want to do that. That's their choice.
That's what never said in the stories.
Right. Want to caution them is, you know, space heaters can be very dangerous. Overloading electricity, using electric panels that have been under salt water and not replaced is very dangerous. And that's trying to heat your house with a stove or with candles.
Propane
heaters, sure, all that stuff. But having said that, most of those people, they have alternatives. The alternatives are not living at the Ritz-Carlton. But the alternatives...
Nor living at home.
Right. You know, look, nature gave us the storm. We just have to deal with it. There's nobody that's culpable, although in our society we have to find somebody. And we are getting those houses back much faster than, as I said, they could have ever done it own, and certainly faster than any government has ever done it. And there are people who just, you know, want to live. I think if it were me, I might very well... stay at home. Cold showers are not fun, and living with lots of clothing on is not fun, but, you know, it's your home.
It's and home.
Particularly
it's
as, you know, you and I get older, you just, I don't know what I would do, but I would certainly not rule out staying at home.
Speaking of home, would Michael Bloomberg ever make home one of his micro apartments?
There's a model of one of those micro apartments at the Museum of City in New York. It's bigger than I lived in an apartment for 10 years, or roughly the same size. For 10 years, thank you very much. The difference is, this is spectacular.
I was pretty impressed with what I saw.
The windows open, and you have no outdoor balcony, but your
mini,
living room.
Right.
The bed, Murphy bed, pulls down. I used to sleep on a couch sometimes, where you'd open the couch up, and it was a pain to take the pillows off and everything, and then open it up and make the bed. Here it just, and I showed...
Would you love to see the mayor living on a Castro convertible, right?
But I did. I did for 10 years. I mean, you know, it's to close the Murphy bed, I showed the press that I could do it with one finger. Now, I will say that at one point I was struggling.
Is that what the splint is?
That was not, but a close. You know, a small kitchen. I cooked my meals all the time.
My question was, does it come furnished? Does it come all of that stuff?
I don't think so. With some of the stuff. No, I don't. I think you can either order it through them or not, or just call and you can buy the stuff. All of my furniture came from the door store or Alexander's.
The door store, sure.
Or I made my own shelves, and I remember I made these bookshelves, and then I stained them, and the shelves warped. So for 10 years, my books rocked back and forth. I was so annoyed with myself. I should have thought of that and not done it that way. There are something like in New York, and more in Manhattan than the other boroughs, 1.8 million families, if you will, of one in two people. Not necessarily married, but couples, people living together. And there's only 1 million studio and one-bedroom apartments. So there's a real
demand.
Got
a problem.
Oh, these are 55 units. These will go instantly. Some are affordable, and there's a lottery. Some, I don't know how they do it for the market rate ones. It's modular construction. It's really quite innovative. And it's being done on a piece of property with the city owned, city selling, complies with all of the building codes and zoning codes, except one of the zoning codes, which we've waived. And we have a right to that on city property. But if this is successful, and it's inconceivable it won't be, and the enormous demand, hopefully the next administration and the next city council will change the laws so that lots of people can build this, because there's enormous demand. There's one reporter says, what about the tenements? This is not five people or 10 people living in a one-room apartment. If you don't do this, what they keep doing is breaking up apartments illegally. And that's when you
we see the tragedies, yeah.
Tragedies with firefighters. Mm. Yeah, I mean, if they don't expand, I'll put it in those terms, but if they don't expand it, that's what happens.
Your reaction to the NAACP's involvement and racial tonation over here.
And there's a Hispanic organization.
Yeah, there's a Hispanic organization.
This is such a disgrace. If you take a look, and they did the same thing with school closings, where we wanted to close 20-odd schools, 24 schools, something like that, that had proficiency levels in single digits and all minority kids, and they fought us in court and actually beat us to stop us from closing the schools. These kids, they did that to those kids will never, for the rest of their lives, catch up. You have another couple of years in a school like that, you will never, I don't care how smart you are, never catch up. For the rest of their lives, they're going to be at a disadvantage, never have the opportunity to share in the great American dream. And here, when you look at the numbers, the kids who are most obese and where a sugar ban or cup size limitation would do the most good tends to be in poor neighborhoods, which in New York tends to be minority neighborhoods, not totally, but tends to be. And for the NAACP, and in all fairness, it's the local chapter, it's not the national one. But for them to do this is just such an outright disgrace, how they can look themselves in a mirror knowing they are hurting deliberately the life expectancy and the quality of life for the people that they're supposed to serve. And my connection, Mark Livonia was reminding me earlier, my connection with the NAACP goes back to, I never forget this. I asked my sister, my memory correct? Yes. We sat around the table every night and talked about what we did. My father talked about making a small donation to the NAACP. I think it was $50 or something, which we didn't have any money.
It was back in Boston.
Yeah, I mean, my father, the best year of his life, he made $11,000, we think. And he made a small donation. And I remember saying, why are you giving to the NAACP? Because, you know, we're not African-American, or Negro is in the name of the organization. And he said, because discrimination against anybody is discrimination against everybody. And if we want to have a life to be free and practice our religion and not have discrimination, we've got to help others. And so, you know, I've always had a soft spot in my heart for the NAACP. But this and the school thing is just such a disgrace. Now, the same thing's true for this Hispanic organization that sold their soul, because a lot of Hispanic kids are overweight as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell me about the cold weather. Have you seen an increase in the shelters? People run into the shelters?
No,
in some
I
heat
think
or not?
It goes up a little bit, but no. I mean, over a long period of time. There's just so many other things, noise in the data, that it's hard to see. And not a lot of other people coming in to take hotel rooms. But if you are freezing, don't have heat, just pick up the phone, 311, or if you have hypothermia, 911 and get an ambulance, and we will put you up in a hotel, and we or FEMA will pay for it. There's no reason for you to get sick or die. On the other hand, if you want to stay at home, there's some common sense things you should do, and that's your choice.
All right, Mr. Mayor, after our break, when we come back, we'll get to our full bank phones here on the News Talk Radio 710 WR, 10 before 9 o'clock, right back.
John Gambling and Mayor Mike on News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
What is looking?
All right, Mr. Mayor, pick up your headphone here. Let's see if we can get some answers for some folks. We're going to start line number three. Happens to be Kurt out on Long Island. Kurt, you got the mayor.
Kurt, you there?
Oh, wait a minute. Hold on.
What?
Yeah, there you go.
There you go. Hi,
there
Kurt.
You go, Kurt.
Oh, thanks so much.
And for taking the call, and for sharing that family and the NAACP story. Thank you. My big concern is why the union would, well, like they always do, when the people are supposed to be going, our kids are supposed to be getting an education, and they're weighing the odds of their education on a betterment or to keep up with...
You're talking about the bus strike.
Yes, the bus strike. I kind of wish that Mr. Reagan was still around to fire them all and would just start all over again. But on the table, would they be willing to sacrifice their unemployment?
Well, I don't know. Look, it's a private company that employs private sector workers. They've got to negotiate something. The reason the contract is out for a bid right now, and I think February 11th or something like that's the deadline for bids, was that it takes a long time to register contracts. There's a lot of bureaucratic stuff in the city for these contracts. They have to technically be approved by the state education department. That takes some time. They have to buy buses or learn new routes and train matrons if there's a new group of people. So, you know, we're doing it now. As a matter of fact, this is probably as late as we can do it. We're really pushing to make it as late as possible. I'm sorry that the people are out on strike, but they have a right to do it. I don't think it's the greatest tactic in the world, and I hope that this union comes to an agreement with all of these bus company owners, that they submit a bid, and if they win it, that's great. You know, I can't take sides in this.
All right, let's go to Joe. Joe, you've got Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Go.
Hi, Joe.
Yes. Good morning, John, Mr. Mayor. I want to mention, I have kids in school, and I get reports from them that they have great teachers, and some teachers aren't so great. And what takes place in the classroom, I want to know, can we evaluate these teachers by putting a camera and microphone in each classroom so they don't know when they're being evaluated?
Well, Joe, you know, number one, I think you're right. That if you, we have 75,000 teachers, and most of them are spectacular. That's why the results are there, where the New York City school system has done so much better than the rest of the New York State, where you can compare it because they all take the same test, or anecdotally compared to the rest of the country. We can't even put cameras, red light cameras, at street corners. I don't think you'd ever get the right to put cameras in the classroom. You know, some companies do watch people evaluate. We typically, services like 311 or and private companies that have call-in desks, they record conversations and then go at, listen to them and then take the employee and say, look, you could have done this better, or that's clever, we're going to get other people to do it, and that sort of thing. But I think in a practical sense, while it is efficient and it's not the stupidest idea by any means, it's just not practical in getting it done. But thanks for the idea.
All right, Joe, thank you. Now we're going to go to number five. That happens to be Harry in Brooklyn. Go, Harry.
Hi, Harry.
Good morning. Your Honor, I thought I read in the paper that you're spending $60 million to rehabilitate the Highbridge footbridge?
I think it's some number like that. I don't remember the exact number. If you go back, McLaren Pool and the Lowe's Theater and a lot of these things, we walked away from them in the 70s, and now we're trying to get them back so that the public has parklands. Highbridge, I don't know if you've seen it, but it was built a long, long time ago to carry water into Manhattan from the Bronx. And there were two big aqueducts that were under the bridge. Those have long been shut down. Now all the water goes underground. This is going to be a phenomenal park, and it connects Manhattan and Washington Heights with the Bronx. And it'll be, you know, great for people that want to go from one place to another. But also, the views are unbelievable. And, Harry, $60 million sounds like a lot of money. But in terms of what it costs to build parks in this day and age, it is not that much. And I think this is being done as efficiently as you possibly can. They shouldn't have ever walked away from this years and years ago, but they did.
Well, they had to make choices, right? I mean, back in the 70s. And
except that I would argue, yeah. I don't agree with the choices. You don't cut back your infrastructure when times are tough. That's when you have to spend more. Creates jobs, but more importantly, it gives you what you need to come out of a downturn. And if you walk away from it, you just prolong the downturn. It's the same thing as the banks. If the banks don't get healthy quickly, particularly the small banks, you're not going to create jobs throughout this country. I don't care whether you like banks or hate banks. Banks are what finance growth.
All right, Mr. Mayor, that's going to do it for us this week. Once again, have yourself a good week.
Looking forward to the next time.
All right, you're headed to Washington?
Heading to say thank you for Sandy money, work on guns, and whatever the next thing New York City needs.
Enjoy. Coming up, stick around if you can. I hope you will. David Gregory, one of the people you're...